All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our MLB podcast for Friday, April 14th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James.
I've been so used to saying NBA there that I almost had to start that over again. So our first MLB pod of the season. We're very excited.
An NBA podcast where you get a master's in business. That would be pretty fun.
That would be kind of awesome. We're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short, here to help you get started, keep winning on FanDuel and or DraftKings DFS. We're going to be talking MLB here. We also provide our projection system for NBA as well, and you can sign up for that by going to DFSR.com/membership. That will get you a free three-day trial to both our MLB projections with Optimal Lineups powered by Lineup Lab, and also NBA Optimal Lineups for the playoffs, all wrapped under one subscription blanket. So go check that out. Free for 3 days, and then just $29.95 a month after that. Baseball season has started off very strong, especially with the pitching on our end. I'm kind of proud of what we've been doing there. So go check it out. I think you will sign up for 3 days and then stick around for the long term. So this is our first baseball pod of the year. We've been sort of just with the NBA MLB overlap going, we've been kind of just trying to get through the uncertainty of those two seasons overlapping, but we feel free and clear of that, the craziness around NBA, and feel like it's time to really start deep diving on MLB. So we'll be bringing podcasts 3 to 4 times a week, breaking down some baseball slates and for the rest of the season. So pretty excited there. Today is one of those days. It actually feels like I know we're still in the beginning of the season, but it feels like kind of that opening day. There's just a lot of like really good pitchers going, and we're gonna focus mostly on the evening games.
Yeah, that happens more early in the season, you know, like the rotations aren't quite as staggered yet. We haven't had injuries or random days off and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, we're gonna run into these very disparate days. Great, where there's tons of great teams to choose from for hitting, and then tons of great pitchers to choose from. And today is a pitcher's day.
Today is, you can really get a sense of that when you look down just some of the Vegas, or all the Vegas lines for today's games. There's no game that has a game total higher than 9, and that's pretty rare. Some of that's good pitching, some of that's bad ballparks for hitting.
It's weather too, you know, like people have done studies and shown that run scoring is depressed during the colder months. So yeah, a lot of contingent factors there.
What we'll do is we'll talk about some pitchers first, and then we'll kind of run through some stacks that you can take a look at, rather than going position by position for baseball. If you're new to that DFS baseball, stacking is really stacking is the idea of playing a 3 to 4 players, let's say, from the same team, in the sense that baseball success tends to compound on each other because one player helps another player score a run, and that's what you really want to do. So if you hear the word stacks, a lot of you will obviously know what that is, but for those that don't know, stacking is just the idea of playing lots of players from the same team, because that is a pretty quick and dirty way to get MLB DFS success, is to pick the teams that are going to score the most runs and play the players from those teams. Doesn't sound that difficult when you state it like that, and then when the rubber meets the road, putting your lineups together, it can get a little trickier. So we'll go through some pitchers, talk about some cash game plays, some tournament plays that you can take a look at, run through some stacks that are kind of standing out to us in our system today, and we'll call it a day from there. But let's start with pitching. You know, for cash games, I guess the really question to ask is not who the cash game pitcher is, but what his ownership is going to be. Kershaw is playing today. He's in LA against the Diamondbacks. He's 12-6 on FanDuel. He's 13-5 on DraftKings. If you had to guess his ownership percentage now in double ups tonight, do you think you can try to pinpoint a number, and we can just do a little bet on what we think it's going to be? Because I mean, he's a clear cash game guy, right? Like, there's no
75% maybe. Yep. That's the number that the chalk has been settling in on recently. It's kind of interesting, you know, as the DFS industry has matured, in particular in DFS baseball, people do tend to move in more similar directions, and you can kind of get a sense of how much, just what percentage of casual players are playing on a given night. Like when Marcus Stroman, if I would have told you 3 years ago that there would be a night, like a not small slate, I think it was 8 games where Marcus Stroman was a 75% cash game start, you can start to get a sense for how groupthinky DFS baseball is at the moment. But Kershaw, when he starts, the sites just haven't really figured out, or FanDuel in particular, hasn't really figured out how to price him appropriately, and he'll just be all over the place, you know. Arizona, obviously a good hitting team, but does much worse on the road than at home, and he's just a strikeout machine, most consistent pitcher going. If you're off him, then you're going to be significantly off chalk tonight.
Yeah, no, they have, you know, they'll throw, Arizona will throw Pollock and Goldschmidt at you. For some reason, they throw Chris Owings in the mix there too, who sucks, but it's one of these teams that just can't get out of its own way sometimes when making their own batting lineups, where they're just like, Chris Owings, you're a righty, right? I know that you don't do anything well, but let's just sandwich you between these two really good hitters just because, I don't know, you're scrappy. You're like a David Eckstein type or something like that. I don't know why teams do this kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, it worked for them last year. They led the majors in WOBA against left-handed pitching last season. So it's not like they're bad against lefties. They should be great again this year, but it's really the home away thing for them. You know, they're a team that's incredible at home and they're very friendly home ballpark, and they were a bottom 10 team in the majors on the road last year. So yeah, you know, you mix and blend that and whatever, and they're going to be better than the average team would be against Kershaw probably, but it's still not probably. I mean, you don't want to stack Diamondbacks obviously, but it's not something that really concerns you too much, because the thing Kershaw does better than anyone else is strike people out, and the Diamondbacks do strike out a reasonable amount. So you put all that together and you have a pretty favorable spot for the league's best pitcher.
Yeah, Chase Field is like Coors South. It's, I think, I mean, Coors is obviously the biggest power expectation mark.
West?
Southwest, East? Maybe. Yeah, I'm not a geography major, dude. I follow sports.
I'm not like a map maker.
I'm not a cartographer. What are you, crazy? I'm staring at, like, you know, SQL projections, SQL databases. The, it's such a power boost that it gives sometimes gives an unrealistic expectation of what that team is. You run into the same thing with the Rockies sometimes, where you can forget, like, yeah, these guys are good. It's because they play in like the equivalent of like the moon in terms of gravity when it comes to like just how the ball can fly out of the park. So I think Kershaw, I think you're right. I think the chalk has there's just some pricing discrepancies here that he hasn't fully caught up. 12.6 is just not the correct price for him on FanDuel, and yeah, it's not going to take. It doesn't take, no matter which way you model, and you don't even have to model. Like, you don't even have to model projections to know that a 12.6 with some of the other pricing that you get on the slate, it's just easy to fit his salary in. 75% might be low. Like, I think, and it's one of these.
Yeah, that's true. I wasn't even frankly thinking about the price. It could be higher than that.
Well, here's the thing too, and this is what these are the slates that I like to attack, and I felt this way around with Scherzer the other day when he went. And he was a day game, and this was a little bit of a shorter slate, but I will tend to put more buy-in on slates like this where the chalk pitcher to me is so obvious, because while not drawing dead, every percentage that does not have Kershaw in their cash game lineup tonight is starting off, I would think, not significantly, but enough behind the eight ball that you kind of like make up, you make up expectation on, to me, every percentage of guy that person that puts in a lineup that does not have him in their lineup. Do you agree with like that line of thinking?
Yes, usually. I'm not sure the case is quite as strong tonight, just because I think you do have a pretty strong option B in Syndergaard. So here, let me make a brief case for you. And now some of this has been mitigated by FanDuel moving towards the quality start rather than the win, but we have Noah Syndergaard going against Miami tonight. Miami, a significantly worse hitting team than Arizona against their respective handedness. You know, Miami struggled against, they feature a lot of big right-handed bats like Stanton and company, and they're just not as good against right-handed pitching. And so it's also a favorable ballpark, although not quite as favorable as LA. I think Syndergaard is a good enough, and the matchup for him is good enough, and the fact that Kershaw's up against Greinke on the other side, which is not, it's less of a slam dunk win than he normally has. So I think all those factors taken together, you're still getting an edge by playing Kershaw, don't get me wrong. And I think you're 100% right when we think this way in football too, when it's like, well, you just have your slam dunk running back. Everyone who doesn't pay him is paying the rake. I think it's close on that tonight, but it's not quite as clear cut just because you do have such a great matchup with Syndergaard too.
Yeah, I agree with that. I would still put Syndergaard like significantly behind Kershaw. Obviously, I don't think you're making the case that like the unroll.
No. It's not. You wouldn't take him straight up. I'm mostly just talking about in terms of, you know, you're not getting, normally you're getting away with murder. Like if the next best pitcher, like it would on a normal day, would be like Teheran or something. Like anyone who plays Teheran instead of Kershaw for cash game purposes is just lighting money on fire. It's not quite as bad, but it's kind of close. And let me point out real quick the reason why that is. You know, just because we're early in the baseball season, we've got a long season to go. There are going to be a few things you're going to want to keep an eye on as we go forward. So when you're setting a DFS baseball lineup, let's just stick with FanDuel right now because that's what we're talking about. The points per dollar you can get on good pitchers, and I'm talking about, you know, how many points they score in a given game as compared to their salary. FanDuel, for whatever reason, has always historically priced it in such a way that pitchers tend to be the best value. Okay, right. So your average pitcher tends to be a better value than your average good hitter at the same, you know, in the same kind of price tier. Now, what this causes is a great incentive to want to allocate more of your salary towards pitching, because not only do you get the best points per dollar from your pitching, you also get the most certainty. Pitchers get points for things like just showing up and pitching an inning, you know, like every pitcher is going to pitch an inning tonight, probably. So you have more built-in points. They're more steady, and hitters are more variable, and they're worse on a points per dollar basis. So that's why you're going to tend to hear us as we go throughout the season, tend to highlight just more of the expensive pitchers in general. Maybe someday FanDuel will change their algorithm. As it stands right now, you're going to lean heavy tonight. Kershaw is by far the best big money option.
Yeah, I would play Kershaw like up to like 14.5 on this slate, frankly. He's 12.6 cool. now, and I would consider going up to 14.5 in that range, I think. That would be like where the question for me started happening, I think.
I think that's stretching. I think
14,000. I'm not stretching it too far here. If you run lineups right now through our system, you get Kershaw on 100% of them, and our system is, you know, weighted mean projections, so it's going to gear itself toward what we would consider to be double ups or
sure,
cash
if
games.
You run 25 lineups, right?
Yeah. Right, exactly. If you run 25 lineups, he's in 100% of them. To take him out, you lose 6.5 points of expectation if you're losing 6.5 points of expectation off a 12.6 salary. Like, I think the dirty math is you can increase that by another $2,000.
I think your math isn't quite right, but it's still. I hear what you're saying.
All this being said, he's underpriced. Now, on DraftKings, you run into the issue of, one, he's more expensive. And I apologize. I have the guy this side of right now to power wash his deck right outside my office window. So if you hear that in the background,
I can't
apologize.
Hear too well. So hopefully.
Okay, great. So on DraftKings, you get him at 13.5. Now, here the question becomes, you're going to need to pair another pitcher with him. So we're going to talk about who maybe some of those other value guys are. Because I'll be honest with you, the decision is still 100% a lock for me on DraftKings, although it's closer here because I'm going to need to allocate significant salary somewhere else into the pitching. But on FanDuel, we agree Kershaw at 100%. I like where you put Syndergaard in here as a nice pivot off of Kershaw, who has significant K upside, coming cheaper. And for tournaments, you'll see Syndergaard's ownership probably... I mean, his ownership in tournaments will be higher than it is in cash because people will do this specific pivot from Kershaw, like off of the chalk guy into Syndergaard.
What you can do is just go Kershaw, or you can go Syndergaard, but you can just go in any other direction and know that you're going to be fading half the field at that point.
It sure seems like it. So, Syndergaard falls into that category. Who else do you think falls into this? Let's say we can call it a pivot off of Kershaw, or as a starting pitcher two on DraftKings. Anyone standing out to you as feeling safe-ish or a guy maybe with upside?
Yeah, so let's first address setting pitchers on DraftKings, because, again, this is another thing that is tricky. Having two pitchers means that generally you can't just lock in the two most expensive guys and call it a day.
Right.
Like, you know, if you try to lock in Kershaw and Syndergaard today, you're going to be in pretty tough sledding when
at some stone cold bums. Like,
yeah, you're just going to get guys batting eighth and, right. You know, just not where you want to be. You're stretching it a little bit too far. And Syndergaard, for that matter, is just, he's more expensive on DraftKings and you have less salary to play with. So all in all, it's just not probably where you want to be. I am looking at a couple of cheaper guys, and I'm curious to hear who you're thinking about, but one guy I'm looking at is Julio Teheran. Now, Teheran to me doesn't really cut the profile of like a big upside tournament play. Let me clarify that by saying that, you know, one of the things you're going to be trying to do if you're not playing Kershaw probably is get separation from the field for big tournaments on FanDuel in particular. I don't see Teheran as your way to be like, ooh, well, I won't play Kershaw, so I'll take Teheran for his big upside. Teheran really has settled in as kind of a 8 or just slightly sub 8K per 9 guy. He doesn't have particularly great control either, so it's like, you know, what you're really hoping for from Teheran is actually just kind of him going out there and throwing a bunch of innings. Now, that can get you there, and I think it kind of makes him perfect for that pitcher 2 slot on DraftKings, because typically for the pitcher 2 slot, mostly, and I'm curious to hear if you agree with this, mostly you're just trying not to get murdered out of your pitcher too.
Yes, like, right.
You're trying to have some guy not show up and like get you negative points. And I think Teheran does that pretty successfully. But he's also kind of expensive on DraftKings. You know, it is a pretty reasonable matchup tonight. Vegas does like the total. When you're taking a look at San Diego, they're obviously one of the worst hitting teams in the league. Is that game in Petco or is that in Atlanta?
No, it's in Atlanta.
Yeah, right. So you don't get the Petco bonus there, and you kind of get the reverse effect of what we talked about with the Diamondbacks earlier. So, you know, you don't get the friendly confines there, but still a good enough matchup to where you could play Teheran tonight and, yeah, not get slammed. But I don't know. Can you pay $8,500 for him, or is there somewhere
else?
You're
looking? It's close on him. I get a little worried when I see, you know, we model pitching, and I think pretty correctly, not exclusively, but some on Vegas lines, because we want to, you know, lock in some win expectation.
Well, that win is really important. I mean, on both sides, they've kind of depressed the value of it in some ways. But yeah, getting the win is still tantamount.
Right. So, and you've seen there's been a little bit of a money line drop on Atlanta. You know, San Diego is not, they're still very bad. They are not as bad as they were for the majority of the season last year. Adding Margot to the top of the lineup is a plus EV move for them. I can't remember, over like, let's say, Jankowski, although you could see him, you'll probably see him like bat second. Meyer's still a good bat. They add Schimpf in the middle of the lineup for the whole season. They're not as bad as they were last season. They're still not good. The bottom of the lineup is absolutely atrocious, like with Hedges and Ibar and stuff, like, and then a pitcher slot. So there's almost like three not automatic outs, although Ibar doesn't strike out a ton. Not three totally automatic, but real close outs at the bottom of that lineup. But yeah. The top of the lineup does scare you enough, and they actually have some speed too, which actually worries me a little bit at times, because teams like the Padres will play pretty fast and loose because they're bad. Like they're like, you know what, whatever, we'll try to run. We need to like kind of make things happen.
I mean, that might make things more variable. That doesn't lower Tehran's expectation. Like if they're taking minus EV steal spots, that's not, we're not worried about that, right?
I would still not in general. But I would still consider him to be a very, very strong starting pitcher to play. I think that he probably ends up being the chalk starting pitcher to slot, only because most people understand that matchup with San Diego is a good one. And so I agree with you that he doesn't strike me as like a guy that I would get excited about. And I definitely, I don't see the total upside for him on FanDuel, just considering the extreme upside you have in some other guys. But I do think, yeah, starting pitcher too. One guy I'm interested to hear your thoughts on, and this guy I was surprised about, but Trevor Bauer he was real good his first start. We kind of know who Trevor Bauer is at this point, I think. He was great in his first start. Cleveland opens the game at -125 against the Tigers, and then they get bet up to -165, which is pretty significant, with the Tigers run expectation dropping almost half a run down to 3.7. Bauer, so it's the Tigers. They have a middle of the order with Miggy and V-Mart, although to a much lesser degree him, that scares you a little bit. It's all righties basically down their lineup, except for like maybe Romine and maybe Tyler Collins, who, you know, worried about that. Where do you see, like, what does that Vegas line movement like say to you about this matchup with Bauer? And like, at what point would you trust this kind of movement? Because he's pretty cheap. Like, he's in this mid-6,000s range. Struck out a ton of guys in his first thing. I'd be interested to get your thoughts on Bauer here.
Well, he struck out a ton of guys, but it's probably worth noting that he also let a ton of guys cross the plate.
And, oh, yeah.
You know, a lot of our users are going to key in on that. And it's kind of, you know, par for the course with Bauer. I think we do know who he is, which is a guy who can top 8 Ks per inning. You know, it's interesting when you look at his profile. He's kind of like a poor man Tulio Teheran, you know, like the peripherals are somewhat similar. He strikes out a few more guys, but he walks a few more guys. He tends to give up the long ball. I think that he's pretty much fine. I mean, and this is to say, too, when you're looking at him as compared to Teheran, you get a $1,700 savings. So the line movement thing, like, this is something I struggle with, because Vegas can have access to so much more information than we have just because their incentives are so much higher. But when a line is moving for baseball this early in the season, I think primarily it typically is because of weather concerns more than anything else. Neither you nor I are meteorologists.
But your dad was, right?
My dad obviously went to Washington University and got a master's in meteorology, but that doesn't translate. Those genes didn't. That apple fell a little further from the tree than I would have liked for these purposes, but
that just gets me every time. Keep going.
yeah. Well, I'm sure I'll tap into that as the season goes in. Like, I'll get my sea legs under me, and I'll be able to predict weather a little bit more accurately. But anyway, I think it probably has something to do with that more than, you know, them all of a sudden liking one guy better than the other. You know what I mean? So I don't know. I think they're close enough to where, you know, given that you're going to choose one over the other, taking the $1,700 savings and fleshing out your batters probably just makes more sense than anything.
You know, you mentioned at the top where picking that starting pitcher too, you were looking to avoid the blow up, right? The Bauer situation to me, correctly or incorrectly, feels much more like a situation that could absolutely go 100%. Completely the wrong way. Whereas Tehran, while he probably doesn't have crazy upside, it doesn't feel like he's as big a favorite to just end up with like negative points. Like, you could see there's a scenario that you could see Bauer ending up with negative points, right?
Yeah, totally fair.
And I just don't see it as much with Tehran, and that's where I'm just wondering about which to pay for, right? And so maybe, you know, you can run into bad situations. You can just get unlucky with pitchers, and like sometimes with starting pitcher twos, you're forced to just kind of play a guy that you don't want to play, but you just have to fill out your lineup that way. Like Josh Tomlin yesterday was a good example of this, of just like a guy with like negative 15 points because he just got absolutely smoked. But and that guy was like a 50% start on DraftKings. Which is just kind of where you are sometimes having to play a guy. So I don't know. All this being said,
baseball is such a long season that I tend to be more in the camp of just play a bunch. If you're worried about the variance, just play a ton of cash game lineups and get your smooth out your variance that way. Because I think if you get in the habit of trying to go for perceived safety, like in a situation like this, then and you're not just trusting Vegas, because I think again the eyeball test is so notoriously unreliable in baseball in particular. I mean, there's tons of insane examples about this. Like, you know, if you watch one hitter hit over the course of 2 weeks, the difference between a 300 hitter and a 250 hitter is like one hit or whatever, right? So, you know, there's all these sorts of examples where the eyeball test will be very, very terrible. And I think you probably should just take the best play and say, so like our system has Bauer being 0.3 points less, but 1,700 cheaper. I personally would not go the direction of erring on the side of Tehran, but I understand. I mean, the numbers might change. Like if the lines move or weather changes, all that could change. I'm not personally in the camp of locking in someone because of the perceived safety, because, hey man, it's baseball. No one's really safe.
One thing that our system also will do, and where projections will change, well, you know, our projections will change a little bit on live line movement. Our projections will also change on opposing lineup once it's released. And so we're calculating expectation, especially around like a strikeout specifically, around when the team actually throws their lineups out there. So you will see things sort of switch when that comes around, because look, if you have a guy at the top of the order that strikes out more than the average player, you know, things like Steve Souza batting at the top of the Rays lineup, right? He strikes out a ton. If you're going to get more at bats, you're going to get more opposing plate appearances for a guy that strikes out a lot. That's going to change for better or for worse a pitcher's projection. So just things that can change a pitcher's projection over the course of the day. These are just some of the things that we put into it. So we got Kershaw. We've talked about Syndergaard, Tehran, Bauer. Anyone else here stand out to you in terms of just like, I don't know, I'm going to do a little pivot into some upside, or is it a short list today and you kind of want to move on?
I guess it's kind of a short list. I think one guy who you could get some interesting separation on, interestingly, is Zach Greinke. You know, we often talk about the importance of the win in DFS, and the win is important, but Greinke is a good enough pitcher and the matchup with LA is not so unfavorable that he can't just like go out there and get a win, you know? Like Kershaw could just give up two runs and he could give up none. And so I think if you want separation for a big tournament, I doubt anyone will be on him at all. And he gets the reverse boost going out of Arizona into LA, much more favorable park. He had success there when he was on the Dodgers. So he's a guy you can consider. I think if you're just on the big upside train, some of the other big names you're going to recognize today, like Chris Archer, wouldn't touch him against Boston. Cueto, not really a high profile upside guy just because the strikeouts aren't really there.
I don't mind Cueto because I think people over. Yeah. I think like what I said with the Rockies earlier is people tend to think the Rockies' offense is better than it is because they play half their games in Coors, and they're just really not a very good offense. Like they have Blackman and Gonzalez at the top of that lineup. They're good lefty hitters. After those two guys, I mean Arenado's actually pretty splits neutral for his career. I think he gets touted like he's this huge lefty killer. I'm pretty sure he's like a platoon neutral guy, but really after the top of that lineup they drop off a cliff pretty quick in terms of the bottom of that lineup.
That's fair. I guess more of my question is like, do you want to pay 9,000 for a guy who strikes out 8 guys per 9 innings? I'm just not really sure. The nice thing you get with Cueto is just straight up innings. Like he's averaged better than 7 innings to start for 3 seasons in a row, almost touching 8 in that one season with the Reds. So you are doing it in terms of, you know, getting big innings upside there. Yeah, no, you've talked me into it. I guess he is a decent upside play.
Let's talk about some stacks. You know, I guess we can focus them a little around cash games that are standing out to us or the system today. You know, we want to target teams that are going to put up runs. We want to target teams
that makes sense.
Oh, yeah, thanks, buddy. Yeah, I'm sure I write a book about this, like just chapter one.
I actually have written an ebook. You can get it for free at dfsr.com/ebook.
Oh, bang. So let's talk about some teams that we can take a look at today in terms of just maybe rounding out some cash games or doing some maybe, I don't know, higher upside tournament plays. Is there a team or two that's standing out to you that feels, I hate using this word, but I don't ever know another word. Safe to you, safe. Nothing is safe in baseball, but and it's actually the thing that can make baseball so maddening over the short term is that all things that seem like they're going to make sense, like in basketball. You know, there's no way that LeBron would be playing the Nets and just go out and score 0 points, right? Like, it could never happen. You know, you're going to run into, you know, some blowout issues, or, you know, maybe he's not going to quite hit his upside. But over the course of the game, he's going to at least score points. And you'll tilt at the end if he just didn't score enough. Baseball, obviously, is totally different. You can have a 9-run, you know, or you can have like a 12-run implied total in Colorado, with Colorado getting 7.5 in it, and they can just score 1 run.
Or they can score 9 runs and your guy just goes 0-for-4. Like, there's a ton of stuff.
So anyway.
But yes, baseball has variance. I agree with that point. One thing that's crazy tonight, you talked about cash games. I don't know if I've ever seen this, but both our FanDuel and DraftKings lineups do not have... Neither lineup has two players from the same team on it. So, like, you get 9 distinct teams on FanDuel and 9 distinct teams on DraftKings as well. 10, I think. So that's... I just find that to be crazy. I don't recall seeing that in the past. But if you are looking to stack teams, you know, we always... Again, start with the Vegas total. That's a good place if, you know, you don't want to trust your own eyeball test. They put a lot of time and effort into figuring out who's going to have a good night from night to night. One of the teams I'm really liking tonight is the Blue Jays. Vegas actually isn't super, super high on them, but we've talked about this in the past where there are teams that... So when you can't trust just the strict Vegas total is when teams are more top-heavy or bottom-heavy on how they score their runs. The Blue Jays obviously feature a lot of big right-handed bats early in the order, and all of those guys should be in very favorable spots against Wade Miley tonight. So, you know, Bautista, Encarnacion, Donaldson, Tulowitzki, all those guys for me heavily, heavily in play. Maybe even... those are probably the guys I'm really targeting. But I think that's a great big tournament stack, and I think all those guys make for reasonable cash game options too.
I think what you mentioned about the distinct teams coming up in lineups, that really speaks to the nature of this slate, in that we are in a situation where no team, like the Vegas totals by and large are very low for tonight. Nothing with over 9, because you got a lot of, you know, this is the reason we're able to talk about a decent amount of pitchers, is because there's just a lot of pretty good ones going. No team is really standing out as looking to score a lot of runs here. And I think in situations like that, for cash games, you just do want to spread out the expectation among a lot of these teams and just take everyone at good price points. You know, we've been, our cash games up until this point till today, I believe, have been pretty much stacks, just based on, you know, teams that are in much, much better spots than the other teams in the slate. That's just not the case today. So I do like your Toronto, the Toronto idea there. I think you'll see guys like Donaldson and Bautista come in. The line on that dropped a little bit. I think sometimes that has to do in Toronto with whether that roof is going to be open or closed. And I for the life of me, I cannot remember which one was the better one. I know I should just know it at this point, but like, I believe roof closed is worse than roof open. Really? In Toronto. I could be wrong about that, and I probably am. Someone can correct me on it. I think that's an interesting spot to go. I think Minnesota is in a good spot today, considering they're facing...
Yeah, Dylan Covey.
Yeah, Covey, who's, I believe, making his first career start today. I'll double check that, right. This is his first start. The Twins do have, I believe, the highest implied total of the day at 4.8-ish. They don't have a ton of power at the top of their lineup. Well, they really just don't have a ton of power in general in their lineup. Even, you know, Snow has power. I mean, Dozier hit a ton of home runs. It was great last year. But guys like, and I guess Kepler a little bit, but these guys aren't like your traditional power hitters. But they will stagger their lineup. They will go righty-lefty. It makes it hard to play matchups with them. Covey, obviously, whenever you get an unknown pitcher, you don't wait and see if the guy's going to be good. He doesn't have a minor league track record of anything that we need to be.
This guy's a non-prospect. Like, the A's just let him go for nothing. He's never put up better than 7 Ks per 9 in the minors. It has control issues. This is a terrific spot. The sad thing is that we don't get a better hitting team than the Twins to stack up against them.
Right, and I think that's the one problem, right? Is that if this was not any other team, but a lot of other teams, especially in the American League, we would probably see more of a concentration of their guys. All these guys are also sort of priced correctly. Like, Dozier is still coming off that career season. He's still he's kind of just expensive at 3.7 on FanDuel. I don't love the deal, though. I do like the spot he's going to hit in the order. Kepler coming a little bit cheaper, so I could see that if he hits second, which he should today. But like I said, like, Mauer doesn't hit for power, right? Like he just is kind of just in the middle of the order, and he's not a power hitter. So while I like the Twins run total, I will probably end up playing one or two of these guys, possibly in cash. It's hard to get so excited on the prospect of them just, I don't know, like just compounding run after run after run, just because the lineup isn't really set up like that. So we got Twins, we got Toronto. Anyone else the system sort of just kind of pulling out here for cash games? I know we said it's pretty spread around to a bunch of different teams, but after those two teams, who else is in a good spot?
Yeah, let's clarify and say that you're gonna want to stack if you're in a big tournament, because that's just what you probably need to do. Pick and choose a couple of good guys from random teams, but really key in on a team that might go off. I don't know that tonight's interesting, because what you can do is just play any old stack and probably not be giving up too much edge to the best stack, which kind of makes it fun for, you know, you might just randomly throw out an A stack that gets there or whatever. But for tonight, I actually kind of like the Royals. They are interesting because they don't really feature a lot of power hitters, and so that makes them a poor stack in some ways. But they do have guys that hit left-handed, and they're up against a bad pitcher, so that makes me feel happy. JC Ramirez, you know, coming up through the minors, again, another guy who's kind of a journeyman. He's 28 years old now, never really put anything impressive together. You know, wasn't that great in his first start, wasn't that great in the minors last season or the majors. So yeah, top to bottom, he's just a great matchup. Now the Royals, they are pretty concentrated towards the top of their lineup. Like, things really tail off dramatically as you get towards the bottom, guys like Paolo Orlando and Escobar and Mondesi and company. But the top has some actual names: Gordon, Moustakas, Kane. You could throw Hosmer in there as well. So maybe you stack the top four guys in that lineup and hope to get lucky and that they concentrate runs towards the top. You get some speed upside with Kane, maybe you get some power upside with Moustakas. But yeah, it's not a it doesn't feel like the optimal stack. Like, I can't imagine possibly recommending this stack in a normal night, but on tonight, that it could pass.
Yeah, no, I think you're going to see a couple of those guys specifically around the top of that lineup, and you're going to hear us talk. Look, if you don't understand this point with DFS baseball, you need to start reading like the ebooks and just start like trying to figure out like where value is correlated in terms of DFS baseball. But you really need to be hitting at the top of the lineup to really even just be especially for cash games, in consideration, for obvious reasons. Like, the only way to score points is to get up to the plate, and the only way to get up to the plate more is to hit at the top of the lineup, because you're just going to
explain why that matters, though, because I think there are, and you can do it briefly, but I think there are people out there who are coming over from basketball, coming over from football, and we always talk about opportunity as it pertains to basketball. Opportunity in basketball comes from minutes and usage. Why is batting at the top of the lineup actually so important?
Because you just, okay, so obviously the only way to score points in baseball is to be up at the plate and do something when you're there, right? Like, have some kind of outcome where you get on base and then, you know, steal a base or score a run or whatever, hit a home run. When you hit at the top of the lineup, even if you look back and just do a quick lookup of average plate appearances last season, in terms of where, how many average plate appearances a player spot in the lineup got, off the top of my head, it was 4.55 plate appearances for the first slot, and then 4.34 or something like that for the second slot. So you take, okay, you take a significant dip, a rather significant dip in terms of just how many times you're going to stand up at the plate from one to two. And then when you get to five, when you get one through five, goes down at like pretty much the same rate, which I can't remember what it's like, 0.12 down each time or something like that. And when you get to six, yep, is when you fall off a cliff. Like, that's just when the plate appearances like kind of just stop. And so you really just, if you know, like in minutes in basketball, the only way you can score points is if you're on the court. The only way you can score points in baseball is if you're up at the plate, and it really, really matters. Now, when you look at it over, when you look over the course of a season, you know, we did a quick study on just the value of plate appearances, and it turned out, like, you know, the first hitter in the lineup over the course of last season on a points per dollar play was like by far the best value. Now, the worst value on a points per dollar play was actually third, which is mostly because the third hitter is usually the quote unquote best hitter in the lineup, and they're probably just expensive. It wasn't because the player was, you know, bad or whatever. But the first hitter in the lineup is just so far and away a better value because they just step up to the plate. So I don't know if I'm like filibustering that answer or if that makes sense what I'm saying. Or
no, I think you got most of what I was looking for. I think pointing out the opportunity is pretty important. I think it's also pretty important to point out who you bat around in the National League in particular. If you bat within three spots of the pitcher back there, like basically sixths on, that's bad for you, right? That's going to really decrease your opportunity to score runs. Oftentimes decreases your opportunity to get steals too, because the pitcher will bunt you over. So yeah, I think that matters. You know, batting around Miguel Cabrera means you're going to get more chances to get knocked in and to knock him in if you're on the other side. So yeah, batting order, it used to feel important. Now it feels absolutely critical. And I think the research is borne that out.
Yeah, so. And this isn't, it's not a secret anymore. We've been modeling off batting order for years, and I felt at times it was like a labor of love trying to explain to people why, like, this guy or this was showing up more often. And it's just becoming, as we round out knowledge and as the space grows and knowledge bases increase in general, people become smarter. It's less of a Craig Gentry? Why? You're like, well, he's batting first and he's the cheapest, you know? Like, it's just not, it's just basic. I usually just say it's math, man. Like, this is just basic math. Like, the guy doesn't need to be that good. If he's going to hit more times than anyone else on the team and he's the cheapest guy, like, you can just play him. So anyway, you'll hear us kind of harp on this over the entire course of the season. It's something you have to just understand. It's very important. Batting lineup matters. A couple other guys before we go that you can consider. Eric Thames still coming way too cheap on FanDuel in a good spot against Feldman. His price just refuses to climb. He's just been pretty chalky, and I suspect he is too. Tim Anderson, these are just kind of one-off guys that are kind of showing up then in stacks that we didn't talk about. Anderson in a good spot at shortstop. Overall, this is a pretty... this is an interesting slate. I like the way you said about just kind of going, you can go a lot of different stacking routes here because no team is really jumping out. I think you're going to see ownership percentages kind of all over the place. Buddy, first baseball podcast in the books. What do you think?
Not bad. Not bad.
I'm going to give myself like a 7.5 and you 7.75. You're a little bit better. We're from dailyfantasysportsrankings.com, DFSR.com for short. Head over DFSR.com/membership. You can get a free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab. It's optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. That's going to include NBA too throughout the playoffs. So you're all wrapped up for your DFS needs through the next couple months with basketball and then through the whole summer for baseball. We'll be back again next week talking more baseball. Buddy, enjoy your weekend.
Will do, man.